The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by Squarespace, the easiest solution to web design around. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial and use the offer code IGN for 10% off your order.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond. Wow. Welcome to Podcast Beyond, episode 385. It is the PlayStation podcast from the website IGN, and it's the best one there is. Get out of our way. I am Max Scoville. Joining me is Marty Silva.
Hey, that's not even my name. You got my
own name. Right. Yeah, you're right.
Brian Talano.
Benjamin.
I saw Brian in the airport yesterday on the way back from PAX. I was like, it's Byron Baltano.
Benjamin Tartanus.
Marty, I got a confession. I called you Marty Silva for about 2 years.
Doesn't matter. You have a dumb name.
Also joining me is Brian Tolino.
Hi, Brap Rap. Thanks for having me.
And Vincent Incognito.
Ebond.
Wow.
Beautiful.
Yap nap.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you for joining me. Last week's episode was weird. We had a wonderful thing that happened. The headline for the episode we put it up was, is Project Morpheus coming out in 2015? And coincidentally, the blog post that went up immediately after it was Project Morpheus slated for 2016. Just like, because we recorded it like the day before GDC started, yeah. And just everything. We didn't have really a whole lot to talk about because we recorded it right before GDC and PAX East and yep. A bunch of games coming out.
Although I do want to point out, I told you so. I came on the show last week, and I told everyone in this room it's not coming out this year, and everyone was like, meh, I have a litany of excuses why it is. And then that post went up.
I wouldn't use the word a litany of exclusives.
Yeah, excuses.
A myriad of excuses.
A cornucopia.
I didn't think it was going to come out this year.
Yeah, I have a bad memory.
We recorded it. I don't know. Who cares?
We were
it doesn't
drunk
matter.
In the morning. Max, what are we going to talk about this
we're
week?
We're going to be talking about Final Fantasy 25. Final Fantasy 15, episode Duske, because you can't just have a name of a thing with a number after
it.
Without
Duskai.
Duskai?
Yeah, so Square Enix got
Duskai. Duskai right here.
Duskai right here.
It's going to get over Duskaya. Here. Duskaya? Yeah. Yeah, anyway. There's PAX East, obviously happened. You guys checked out Adrift, Mayan Death Robots, Jotun Volume, Plague Knight, DLC, Death's Gambit, Severed.
Man, I
checked
can just out put Severed anything too. On that paper and he's going to read it.
Yeah.
Project Morpheus, which I actually got to play with, which is pretty exciting. And of course, Helldivers. Can we get a high five right here?
Yeah!
Because we're Helldiving. It's a game that came out that we're going to talk about.
It's
a PG show.
What's wrong with you? Should we?
I just want to. I'm going to let you all do your show afterwards, but I just want to talk about Final Fantasy 15.
I'm okay.
Let's start there.
Yeah, that was to me by far the thing of the show at PAX. So Vince, Brian, and I were all at PAX. Max, you were not invited because of that one thing you did in Boston a couple years ago during the AC3 press event.
I ate a bird.
A bird
flew into the event space, and I thought it was swag or a promotional hamburger. And
I mean, they rented out the rare bald eagle,
yeah.
And you actually took a bite out of one of America's 14 bald eagles. and it can no longer fly. So that's
one of America's top five birds.
I'm surprised they didn't like fry it and cook it.
I'm still stuck on this promotional hamburger. I've been to many events in the last few years. I have never seen a promotional
hamburger.
That's
the biggest game journalist lie I've ever heard.
The
You've seen there.
Yeah.
It's called a slider, and they have it literally every time.
Okay. FES sliders.
I do stand corrected. If those count, yes, those are promotional hamburgers.
All right. Okay, but you're all monsters, and I just want to talk about Final Fantasy.
Okay, let's talk about Final Fantasy.
So Mitch and I, Vince, you got to play a little bit of it, sort of by weird circumstances,
yes,
because we threw you into it. We'll get into that. But Mitch and I sat down for about 3 hours and played episode Duskai, which is the demo that comes. It's not a demo because it's not going to actually be in 15. This is its own thing.
What?
I didn't know that at all.
So it's Final Fantasy 15 Ground Zeroes?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
it is.
Ostensibly, yes.
Okay.
So we play it. This is the thing that comes with Type Zero if you buy it day one.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll be able to play this in about a week. And right off the bat, like there's a couple things on it that really just kind of blew my mind. It's that the game is impossibly gorgeous. It's one of the best looking games I've seen and I've gotten to actually play. Yeah, playing
it's stunning.
Yeah, and it's not only is it like, man, yeah, the characters look great and like the world's huge and really gorgeous, but there are so many little details that like we were capturing and I moved towards this lagoon and there was this giant dinosaur in the distance and I sort of just wanted to capture some footage of it. But the way my character was standing on a rock, he like shifted his body weight and he had his left leg lower than his right leg and his right leg was like bent in a way and he sort of was like moving a little bit to like maintain his balance and then all of a sudden one of the other party characters circles around, looks at his watch and taps on it because I was standing there for too long and he's like, are we going to get going?
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's like incredible. Little details like this that are so unnecessary.
See, that's exactly what I want. That's what I want to hear.
Yeah.
So what's the control like? Like I know the big complaint with like 13 was it was like too linear for the most part.
Sure, sure. I mean, it's open. This, the demo right from the get-go is super open. They're like, hey, the car broke down and you need we need 20 grand in order to fix it from the actual like gas station. There's a gas station in the game, like on a highway with real cars and food that you can buy. It's really bizarre.
No pepperoni sticks.
No pepperoni sticks.
Side note, I love buying food in games.
Oh, it's the best.
It's really great.
My God.
You're going to
love this game.
Yeah, this is such a thing.
Every time you
Ever since River City Ransom, I've loved buying food in games.
So every time you camp at night in this game, and this is when you camp is when you actually level up. So like everything you've killed throughout the day, you cash in at the end of a night, and then you level up from there.
Huh.
But depending on the sort of the stuff you've gathered while hunting, there's a cook in your group, and he will make your party a meal, and the better stuff you have, the better your meal is, and the better stat boosts, buffs you'll get for the next day.
Is that his whole job, or does he fight
No,
too?
He fights too.
Oh, he fights
just
too,
like
wow.
Also the cook and the dude bro fest.
Putting that guy to work.
But like, it ranges from like sirloin to like
flame broiled
breakfast.
Toast.
And if you don't have anything, he makes the team flame broiled toast. And an image of just a piece of toast comes up, and you guys don't get any buffs for the next day.
Oh, man.
If you start your next day late, does your character just run around with the toast in his mouth? Like?
Oh my God.
That's an anime joke for those of you who enjoy anime.
It's pronounced anime.
Anime.
The battle system is super fun. It's real time, combo driven in that your main character has like five different types of melee weapons. Like you have quick swords, you have lances, you have Zweihanders, which is German for a two hander.
Wow. I'm okay with that. I think that's exciting. I think I'm interested in it.
And the way you sort of order them is dictates how your combos roll out. So if you put your Zweihander as the first weapon, you're going to start off with a really slow, broad, powerful strike.
Yeah.
Whereas if you put, like, that's how Mitch was playing. And so he would do sort of an area of effect thing and then go in with quicker blows. Whereas, like, I went from sort of fast to slow. And so my character would just.
What would you compare the combat to, like, in terms of how you're pushing the buttons to make this stuff happen? Because we haven't really seen that.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually holding the button, so it's holding square in the combo, and you're doing this all at the same time while monitoring your MP, which is it's a gauge that refills, but that's how you warp in and out of combat. You do sort of like it's like the blink in Dishonored.
Okay.
Oh, interesting.
You're also doing techniques, which are like, you know, sort of dragoon strikes or these big like sweeping tempest strikes,
and those are mapped to triangle, right?
Those are mapped to triangle, yeah. But you have to monitor all of these at the same time because if your MP meter gets to zero, you're sort of just like useless for a little bit. Yeah.
At risk of sounding totally stupid, would you say that this is sort of throwing the entire like Final Fantasy battle system out the window as we know it, or is it?
Yeah, I mean, it's not. It reminds me most of Final Fantasy XII's Gambit system. I don't know if you guys played that, but it was more of you're sort of a lot of it goes into the preparation beforehand. and then that's how your character reacts in battle. But everything was in real time. There's no, like, as soon as we loaded in, there was no more loading. And so when enemies approach you, you just enter combat. It's not even like Chrono Trigger.
It's not like you're walking in this totally empty field and then this giant house shows up.
No, totally.
That's incredible, because I was playing some Monster Hunter over the weekend, and I guess I forgot how luxurious it is to run around a world that doesn't have a loading screen every 50 feet, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Really great. The demo is weird in a really good way. I mean, aside from that gas station stuff, there's like a random Chocobo Ranch you come across with just super silly characters.
Did you get a sense of how much gameplay there is, how big it is, how long it is? Or?
I mean, the 3 hours, we didn't finish the... Like, we didn't do everything. We barely finished the main thing. So there's a bunch of side quests. There's evidently there's this cave that's like a super high level dungeon that we Mitch and I didn't even find.
I saw that in the video.
This is a standalone thing.
Yeah.
And they're selling it?
No, it comes. It comes with a Final Fantasy Type Zero.
Got it.
So if you buy Type Zero, I mean, it's the Metal Gear Solid 2 demo on Zone of the Enders, or Final Fantasy 8 on Musashi.
But possibly even longer.
Totally. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's way longer. It's really
cool. And it's cool because I like the idea that it's own thing.
Yeah.
Like, this is a... It's sort of a prequel, but it seems like this is going to exist partially through the story.
That's so exciting.
Do you know if anything carries over that you do?
I don't. I would bet no.
Really?
Yeah, but I don't actually know.
You can't just pocket some delicious...
Toast?
Some toast. Save it for the main
game.
Some
aged 2015 toast for whenever this game
I'm going to tell a very short, very quick story, but I was friends with a kid in elementary school who was rather portly, and he used to bring frozen waffles in his pockets, and then he would go to gym class and run around where they would warm up, and then he would stop after a nice jog and pull them out of his pocket and eat hot, soggy waffles.
Where's he now?
He's a comedian.
Is wow. Yes. And his name is Mike Drucker. He's really a comedian?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I had a friend who would take the dinner rolls that they were throwing away from the cafeteria and just like stuff them in his big winter parka. And then we'd be sitting in math class and he just like produced this like weird little just this.
Yeah, like a like a pigeon man.
Very much.
He's like the
he was not portly. He was this really scrawny guy who would just be wearing this giant like FUBU parka, and he just would like pull
he
out
just wore
tiny
giant
roll.
Bread jackets.
You could like hide all sorts of loaves in that parka.
He's like the strange pigeon lady from Home Alone 2 Manhattan Madness.
Yeah.
Yeah. So speaking
not
of parkas,
the name of that film.
How was the rest of PAX East? I've got bad news for those of you listening at home. I guess this is sort of news ghost. News ghost hurt his legs.
R.I.P. News Ghost.
News Ghost broke his legs, so he won't be here today. Except
we
for a little
news
bit.
Ghosted.
I know.
What was the thing you said?
It was
at our
a moment of honor for. Okay, this is terrible. I said that we've got a lot to talk about that isn't really news, and that News Ghost won't be here today because he was busted for possession. And I didn't mean that as a ghost joke. Yep. I just say that sometimes.
Yeah. Your pay was actually docked after that.
Yeah,
that was
really
bad. Yeah, that was weird. Your paycheck's going to be small.
I feel really bad about that.
Yeah. But seriously, shout out to everyone at PAX who came up to us and said that they were digging New Beyond, and a lot of people like that.
Thank you for everybody who went up to Marty and bugged him about Battletoads because I said on social media that would be funny to do.
Yeah.
That was awful. I wanted to break you
that
as a man.
The best one, a girl came up to me and was like, hey, so this is my first PAX. Have you been here before? And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, I'm looking for a theater. I think it's called the Battletoads Theater. And I just like have my hands up and I'm like, well, how did like what happened?
That's awesome. That's a great prank.
If any of you feel like you're missing something, they're not. I just thought it was like, here's something that nobody wants to hear about multiple times in a day.
Yeah.
It's just like, well, you know, I just went to Beyond Group and I was like, hey guys.
Yeah.
I went in the what did you guys see at PAX? Sorry, I'm
so PAX was interesting because it was, you know, back to back with GDC and it made us realize that maybe a lot of companies only have one convention set. Like Sony had a huge presence at GDC, which is strange, right?
Yeah.
Like they had one of the biggest booths there.
Yeah.
And I always love their booth, especially this is personal because it's carpeted.
Oh, yeah.
You're walking like around this hard floor and you get to the Sony and it's nice. It's carpeted. It feels like you're in the 80s sitting on the floor of your friend's house playing a video game. Yeah. It's really nice. It's comfy.
It's also easy to get to because it's always the first thing you see
when you walk in the
front entrance.
And they had tons of demos there, right? Like I believe they had Morpheus behind like a line area. But they also had Bloodborne playable on the floor.
They had Galaxy. They had Amplitude. They had Axiom Verge.
They had Severed.
Yeah,
Severed. Did you guys mess with Severed at all?
So we did at PAX. So here's the thing. Sony was not at PAX.
Yeah, not in an official regard.
Not in any official capacity. A lot of their games, Axiom Verge, Severed, and a few others, kind of sprinkled out throughout the floor at PAX. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like big guys, or the big guy, the big boys.
No big,
big
boys.
They weren't really there, you know. Like Nintendo had a small kind of showing a bunch of stuff from E3. Microsoft, same sort of deal.
Yeah, Microsoft had a lot of stuff, but it was stuff we'd seen before. But like, there was no Sony booth, no Ubisoft booth, no EA, no Activision, no 2K. Blizzard had a big booth with Overwatch, which was cool. But yeah, I mean, a lot of the stuff we saw at PAX East that was cool were the stuff that we sort of had to dig for in the Indie Mega booth, at a sort of offsite events. Like you went to the Adrift event,
which was really interesting. I can't wait to talk about that. But it really got me thinking. We were talking about this earlier that I think there might be too many game conventions now, which is great for you if you're like, I've never been to a game convention and now there's one near me. Like I know there's like PAX Australia now, right? And there's PAX South, and like that's pretty awesome to be like, I didn't have a game convention here a few years ago. But in terms of expecting new stuff from each one, it just doesn't happen. The way developers work is that they make builds for these things. And I don't think it's actually a lot of work. It's basically a big diagonal line in development to create a build specifically for an event because it's timed and it's short and it's got to be self-sufficient. And to make one of those for each one of these things, which is now every month and a half, is basically impossible and unsustainable. So what we end up seeing is we go to PAX South and there's a build, and then they bring that to GDC, and then they bring that to PAX East, and then they bring that to South by Southwest, and then that goes to, and then E3, maybe we'll get a new one, but that same E3 one will be at Comic-Con.
There's WonderCon, there's Wizard World New York or something.
There's Gamescom, there's TGS, there's New York Comic-Con. Yeah.
You say Wizard World? Is that a real one?
Wizard World, I don't know if that's, I might
used
be
to be Wizard
myself.
World in
I think that was just New York Comic-Con.
There's Dragon Con, that's a real one.
These things frequently overlap too, like we saw with GDC and PAX. I was gonna try and meet up with the Devolver Digital people because I saw them at GDC last year, and it was great. They had like a little gallery space full of like Hotline Miami art, and they were just hanging out and kind of talking to people. And I like texted them on like the second day of GDC, and I was like, what are you guys up to tonight? What are you doing? And they were like, we left.
Yeah.
We're gone. And I was like, oh, well, all right then.
Yeah. But I mean, I actually – we, after about a day at PAX, or really actually a few hours, we were like, this is not a show for big games, and that sort of liberates us to go, let's go hunting the show floor for really cool, weird stuff that we can play. And,
PAX,
you know,
I mean, PAX in general, it's like, it's really, it. There is AAA support for like PAX Prime, but I think that it's just, you're going to get like kind of leftovers from E3 or Comic-Con or Gamescom.
Yeah.
And that's at the big one, you know, and you're going to get like really kind of meager helpings at from the AAA guys. But, you know, indie stuff, like, that's a perfect opportunity for, like, a smaller studio to be like, hey, here's our new thing that you've never seen before that we've been saving up for, you know?
Sure. Yeah. And then you get games like Shovel Knight and Severed and Hotline Miami, too, that suddenly become the stars of the show. And justifiably so. You know, those are great products. So.
And it's interesting, too, because, like, you also have to take into consideration that more and more, and we're seeing this, publishers are trying to control their own message, right? They're trying to be the ones who deliver the big haymaker punches on their own products. So you had PSX for the first time this year. And PSX, we went in thinking, this is going to be a tiny little, you know, silly show with not a lot. And then they show the first gameplay of Uncharted 4. They announce that a new God of War is in development. Yeah. And all of a sudden, you're like, whoa, then what are they going to do? What are they going to say at PAX South, which is a new thing?
Yeah.
They weren't at PAX South. Then you go, what are they going to say at GDC? I mean, they showed us indies at GDC, but it was all stuff that we've mostly seen before. Mm-hmm. And then there's absolutely nothing to show for PAX East. Yeah. So I think it's also part of that narrative where the big boys more and more are trying to tell their own story, and they'll make their event the one where all the big stuff comes out.
Yeah.
And all the other ones will just be like, well, whatever shows up, but we're not going to be the ones to bring it there.
Yeah. It was like, I was talking with one of our video guys while we were there too. I was like, man, it's weird that like, I look around the show floor and I've played everything at two or three other events. But then at the same time, I'm like, but 99.9% of these people haven't.
Yeah, totally.
Right? So I start having to be like, all right, take a step back. Like, yes, it sucks in terms of we fly out there to work. And it makes working hard when we don't have new things to play. But I'm like, when I'm talking about Splatoon, I'm like, it's been shown at E3 and Gamescom. And if you weren't one of the 0.0001% of people to go to E3 or German, you haven't played Splatoon.
Yeah.
And so you can go now and play it.
And there's a huge line for it, you know?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it's
totally.
Like, you know, and it's,
there's also weird stuff. Like there was a line for Titanfall.
That was
an old video.
The other thing that's happening a lot
people
of,
just like to wait in line at these things.
Yeah. The other thing that's happening is there's a bigger and bigger presence for streaming at these things. Like Twitch has a big booth and YouTube has a big booth. And I saw 200 people sitting in an open theater watching two people play Tetris against each other.
Yeah.
And that's just like,
yeah,
sure. However you want to spend your money or your time at a convention is fine. That's on that's on you. But
so I've been actually thinking a lot about like how conventions work and what they represent and really what we're seeing. I actually this whole thing kind of came to me as I was watching a couple of Brony documentaries on Netflix. There's like two of them on there, and it was literally like a hungover afternoon, and me and my friends were like, oh, let's go mock these people. Ah. And we came out of it, we're like,
why do you and your friends have weird accents?
I don't know, because we were hungover and mean, and we're like, we're gonna cringe.
We're Vikings.
Let's see how far we can make in this cringe fest. Then we watched it, we're like, this is actually really interesting kind of like commentary on how people relate in the year 2015 and how global fan culture has, like, it used to be like, I don't think I got this up until a certain point, but like a sports bar.
Yeah.
You don't go to a sports bar being like, I'm here to watch sports. You go in there and you're like, I'm going to kind of congregate with people who have a kind of loosely similar interest. And you're not going to walk in there and immediately meet your best friend or fall in love or whatever. But that's exactly what like a gaming convention is or a comic convention. It is gathering with people of a common interest and having like, if you're here, you probably have something in common with me.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of like we see the same stuff happening online. We see it with, you know, the Beyond Group and like any kind of website that actually has a community that exists.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. I my favorite convention, weird enough as it is Fanime. Like it's a kind of janky, well, not it's a smaller scale anime convention in San Jose. And it's just a bunch of people hanging out. Like it's so much social, and they're not, you know, there's no new games being unveiled. It's not like this this exclusive reveal. Occasionally they'll get guests and stuff, but it's a bunch of people like kind of, you know, dicking around buying Gundam models and wearing like Lolita costumes and stuff. And it's just the fact that here's a bunch of people being weird together. And, you know, in kind of in real life, it's like if you're into sports, that's, you know, socially acceptable. But here it is, we're in the future and whatever your interest is, you can kind of make a gathering.
I think you totally nailed it. It's like we have to separate the fact that every one of these things isn't going to be the biggest news thing in the world because it's not really about that anymore. It is about getting people together who live in areas who may not necessarily have a huge support group of people around them.
That's exactly it.
For the stuff they love.
Yeah.
And, you know, like we're spoiled. Like I remember there was a couple games I was playing there. There was a really big emphasis on like local co-op platforming and kind of like Smash Brothers style games there. And the big takeaway was just like, hey, I can't wait to play these, but also that, you know, some people in other situations might not get to enjoy this game the way I do because this is like we have no shortage of people at IGN that can play video games together. And I think we lose sight of that sometimes is that a lot of people do live in a neighborhood or a town or an area, or they just go to work all day and maybe they have one action figure on their desk and that's it. Somebody else is like, oh yeah, I love that too. But that's about it, you know?
And connecting the dots between that point and what Max was saying before about why people go to cons and what they represent, what we also forget sometimes because we are immersed in, you know, the games industry and we're surrounded every day by people who are passionate about games. So that sports bar experience is something that any sports fan can have pretty much any night of the week, anywhere in the country. That the experience of being able to go somewhere and, you know, so like they have the equivalent of wearing your team's jersey.
Yeah.
Like, and being able to find other people who are going to look at your jersey and be like, awesome, we're a fan of the same thing. Yeah. Gamers get that once a year. And that's if they have the money and the time to go to one of these conventions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We also sort of take it for granted being in San Francisco because there are things everywhere in the city where we could go. There's that, the Folsom Foundry.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Like twice a week where you can go and play games with a bunch of people.
There's Free Gold
Barcade. Yeah. There's a bunch of, barcades. Yeah. There's pinball places or comic book stores. But if you're growing up in Wisconsin or Idaho or Kansas or
totally.
You know, one of the other gun-shaped states.
It's at risk of going like kind of too far out on a limb here, you know, you go back 100, 150 years, that's kind of how religion worked.
Yeah.
You know, like you'd meet somebody in like your fur trapper tent and you're sitting by your ice fishing hole and you're like, and then some guy comes up and you're like, hey, you there, you a Christian? And they're like, yeah. And it's like, oh, we have like some kind of common interest there. Like you have like a vague
reference
idea. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I mean we've got a whole lot more, you know, kind of minutia and moving parts in our
culture
now. Yeah,
we hate
and
the same teams.
There you go. Yeah, so
God.
I don't know.
Yeah, I would say like, you know, while you're waiting for these conventions to come to your town, like start some stuff of your own. Like go in like the Podcast Beyond Facebook group, go find pockets of people that live near you that you can get together and have like game nights with.
Pocket monsters.
Pocket monster people.
Yeah.
I think that's a good way to start. And in the meantime, you know, there are no shortage of conventions. They're happening more and more and more. Yep. So, yeah. So let's talk about what we actually played at
the actual game.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to talk about Adrift.
Yeah, we okay. Let's start there.
Yeah, so you hosted. Man. You and Damon sort of hosted this event at a theater.
We did, yeah. And the cold kept our the actual. We expected a huge turnout. We got a small, intimate turnout, which actually turned out to be really cool.
You said turnout. A lot.
I did say turnout like three times in 4 seconds. So Adrift is being made by Adam Orth, who is most notoriously known as, and he wears this on his chest, is not literally, he doesn't have a shirt that says it, but he was the one that wrote that tweet last year when people were sort of like all upset about the sort of Xbox One always online DRM kind of stuff. And he went on Twitter and he worked for Microsoft at the time and he said, deal with it.
Yeah, and it wasn't the only thing he said.
Yeah, a couple tweets, but that was the one particularly where it was three words, one tweet, lost his job. And he had spent 10 years working his way up in the industry. He got to the top of Microsoft, wrote that tweet one night, probably sitting there with a glass of wine or something, watching TV, just not even thinking about it. I do the same thing all the time. And lost his job, and that was it. And he went from going from being, I'm at one of the biggest publishers in the world, to I'm unemployed, I have nothing. And it sort of made him, I mean, really depressed.
It crushed him. Like I interviewed him about it at PSX. We had a pretty candid interview about it. He doesn't like to go too in detail about it, but he said he didn't ask us not to talk about it because he wasn't trying to deny it happened.
Yeah.
But he did say, he's like, look, it was the worst thing that ever happened in my life and I'm not over it. Like he said to me openly, he's like, I'm not over it. Every day it haunts me still.
It's like a really incredible personal story.
Yeah. But it is one of those stories where out of something dark like that comes something creative and seemingly awesome. And you got to see a demo of it.
Yeah. So he showed us this, it's like a 9-minute demo and I think we have it on IGN.
Yeah, we do. It's part of IGN First.
You can watch it. So they brought us into a movie theater, which is really cool because they rented out just a huge theater where you would go see an actual movie, and they hooked this game up, and they gave out popcorn and sodas to everybody who came in. And they sat people down, and they said, "Okay, we're gonna watch this." And he kind of got up and talked about how, you know, this experience was. He felt like he was sort of like lost in space. He was on his own, and that's really where this game comes from. And my theory is even the word Adrift is spelled with a number one instead of an I, and I to me. The number one represents that one tweet that ruined his life. That's just my theory. Maybe I'm crazy. That's sort of what I picked up watching it. So you start the demo and you're basically – he wears his influences on his sleeves a lot. It's very much like Gravity. Mm-hmm. It's very much – it's got like tones of Interstellar and it's got tons of stuff from 2001 Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
So you're this female and you're not a space marine. You are not shooting anything. You are in this beautiful space station that one of the things I liked the most about it was – it's all in first person, and you see your hands moving around in the air. And instead of just seeing, like, when you think you're in space, you think, well, there's the Earth down there, there's space around you, and then there's all these sort of mechanical devices everywhere, and there it is. But instead, this space station actually has a lot of, like, vegetation in it.
Yeah, I noticed
like,
that from the demo.
There's, like, these beautiful, like, Japanese cherry blossom trees that, like, petals are flickering and floating off of.
That's
and there's
so unsafe. That's probably why everything goes wrong.
Yeah, yeah. So, and the story is told through dialogue and through sort of a Metroid Prime Bioshock-esque way of finding these recordings and videos and stuff like that from other people in your crew. And it only takes you getting through a few tunnels before realizing like something's gone horrible here. Like your space system at one point is completely torn open and you're just like drifting around in space. And the thing that's interesting to me, and I'm wondering how it's going to work, is you are basically constantly low on oxygen. And you are kind of swimming from area to area, reaching for these oxygen tanks that are just sort of like careening around through space. And you grab one, you stick it in your neck and you're... And it's this huge relief, and then your oxygen starts depleting again. So I don't know how well that system's going to work. It could seem like maybe it'll work really well. Because it's not a supernatural game, you won't be able to level up your lungs at some point or anything like that. But it's very dark and it's very harrowing and it's really uncomfortable. And it becomes this kind of like chase from area to get to the next tank while still sort of enjoying how beautiful everything is.
Yeah.
The game's about 3 or 4 hours long, and it's about $20 to $30. They haven't landed on the price yet. But he's making it because he was really fatigued with the sort of bald space marine shooting game. He's like, there's no guns in this game. You don't shoot anything. It's an experience. In the same way, when you go to see When you went to see Interstellar in theaters, you know, you bought the IMAX ticket, you bought popcorn, and you bought parking, and it was like $30, and it was 3 hours, and after that 3 hours, it was done. And yeah, you can go back the next night and do the whole thing over again, but really it was about that experience.
Yeah. I'm curious, though. So when I interviewed him and when he presented it at PSX, he also wanted to be very clear that although it is kind of more of an experience and it's an adventure, there are no guns. He said there are certainly mechanics. Mm-hmm. There are certainly gameplay mechanics and puzzle mechanics.
Yeah.
And he didn't want this to be one of those – he didn't want it to be like a kind of a interactive movie. He wants there to be – he wants it to feel like a game that's fun and you're doing something and interacting with things on a moment-to-moment basis. So did this demo represent that or was this still kind of just drifting through space?
A little bit of both. I didn't get to see – any of the puzzle stuff yet, although he did talk about it. But after the after he played through the demo, which he did perfectly, obviously, because he made the game, he threw it to the crowd and was just like, so who wants to play this? And we did a little raffle thing, and a couple people got to try it. And all of a sudden, people went from being like, I don't know what I'm doing to, or I nailed it. And a couple people, they handed them a controller, and they were swimming around in space trying to grab that oxygen tank and couldn't. And you watch like the life get sucked out of them, and they died. Not in real life, in the game.
That'd have been really dark.
No one was killed in that theater. So that was sort of interesting to see because I could see how that becomes definitely a system that kind of pervades how much you can accomplish in each room.
Yeah, but they've definitely been purposefully just showing stuff from that opening slice of the game.
Yeah. Right.
And we know that eventually your suit is fine.
Yeah.
At some point, this isn't going to be you breathing heavily for the entire game.
Yep.
We know Rivers Cuomo is in the game.
Yep. Yeah, which is weird. The music,
Music
is like a really big part of it, and it's really fascinating because it goes from being this really crazy sort of 2001-esque kind of heavy synth stuff that's almost like – it's kind of like Blade Runner-y. And then you go to this other stuff where you actually find recordings of like delicate piano music, and it's just playing in the background while you're floating through these destroyed stations. Like I, in terms of – atmosphere, like it was one of the most impressive things I've seen in a while. Just
definitely.
Do we have a release date for this? Or?
Summer. Summer. It's going to be PS4, PC, Xbox One.
Yeah, I'm not looking at anything for it. Like, we got the exclusive for that, and I have a vague idea what this is about, and I'm just going to avoid it as much as possible.
Yeah,
we had that Firewatch demo.
Yeah.
Same deal. I'll wait for the final thing.
I mean, this is the ultimate. You know, first world problem, but we live in a very difficult, or we work in a very difficult environment to stay spoiler free on things.
Yeah.
Like, it's very hard. I was actually the same way.
Yeah.
And they said, come on down and check this out. And then I actually ended up seeing the same demo 3 times in a row, which was now I know everything about
now
that demo.
You're going to space.
I'm really curious, just to kind of close, I'm interested to see if they eventually support Project Morpheus with this game because they have it running on Oculus.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I played it on Oculus.
Yeah. What'd you think?
At PSX, and it blew my mind.
Oh,
like,
man.
It literally – I mean, I was already sold on Oculus and, you know, it being kind of like kind of the next step and VR finally having its day. But when that last airlock door opens and the vastness of space is all around you and you literally look down past your feet and see Earth below you, close to what I would call a religious experience.
There was an amazing moment during the demo, now that you mentioned that, where they were talking about the Oculus, and they also said, hey, I just want to, you know, point up to the last row in the theater. There's a guy, Dave, up there. Dave helped in the game. Dave made the Earth. We're like,
Dave, the idea that Earth, Dave has like a backlight. It's just like shimmering silhouette.
I just like the idea of a guy making the Earth named Dave who's sitting in the back row of a theater holding a phone.
With Morpheus coming out now, we know in 2016.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if maybe they'll have that in mind, if it'll be patched in later, or if it'll ever support it or not.
Yeah, So I played with the Morpheus.
Yeah,
I got to do the latest demo. I'm really glad this is a PlayStation podcast because otherwise I would feel sort of guilty about fanboying so hard and just like, you know, hopping on board the hype train like a boxcar hobo, throwing my bags and bindle on there with a pie I've freshly stolen from a windowsill. So I got to go check out a demo of the Morpheus. I saw this last year when they first announced it and they showed it off. And the thing you got to keep in mind is how fast everything with VR has happened.
Yeah.
Oculus Rift was first announced a little bit prior to E3 in 2012. John Carmack was lugging around that weird little gaffer tape like prototype there, and then shortly after that summer, I think it was in August, the Kickstarter went up. They raised $2.5 million. Everyone was like, oh my God, we're talking about VR again. That's crazy. That PAX, I got to see the Oculus Rift for the first time. I was completely wowed. It was a little bit disorienting. It was kind of weird. Fast forward to GDC last year. Still, Oculus was kind of the only guys who'd really been doing anything. Yeah. And then Sony popped up with the Morpheus, and they're like, hey, we're doing this too. And suddenly, you know, you've got this, like 80-year-old hardware manufacturer. I mean, whatever the number is.
Yeah.
I mean, Sony's been around for a while. They're legit. You know, they know how to make hardware, and the fact that they're throwing their weird virtual reality hat into the ring, that's validation.
Their helmet.
Yeah. That's not just a guy who wears flip-flops in interviews and the guy who made Doom and builds rocket cars teaming up. And then, of course, everything kind of sped up after that. The Oculus teamed up – or Oculus teamed up with Samsung to release the – or to announce the Gear. Facebook bought Oculus, which is weird because Facebook has never made anything physical ever. And then just also at GDC, you know, Valve and HTC announced their partnership with the Vive, which I didn't get to check out. But I think that the
it's incredible.
Yeah, Mitch loved it.
Yeah, it's
there's HoloLens
cool.
from Microsoft.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's more AR. You know, it's
you,
kind of a
you could
thing.
Not walk 10 feet at GDC without seeing some VR helmet of some kind.
Yes. Yeah.
Like it was it was all wearable devices for your face.
It is absolutely thrilling and crazy and exhilarating that we are talking about this so much so fast. Mm-hmm. In the last year, it went from this kind of weird pipe dream possibility to this like –
It is a
latent industry. It is a frontier of media. It is really, really cool.
It's now a brand new console war.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
We have to have another one of those.
Exactly.
Like now it's going to be like, well, this one tracks your head better, and that one has Gex.
What's weird, though, is that the Morpheus is the only one that is directly consumer targeted.
Yeah.
You know? And the thing is, it's coming to currently the leading console. You know, like it's an install base of 20 million and growing or whatever. And the fact that it's a device you can plug right in and you're doing VR is extremely thrilling. And I'm really looking forward to what Sony shows off at E3. And the fact that they've given us a solid release window, which Oculus just did. And they've been talking for a while.
Yeah, yeah. So what was your demo like?
I mean, so the demo, they brought me in. Let me just preface this. Last year, they put the thing on my head. They're like, check it out. Here's you doing sort of a Skyrim-esque like – like you're going to try to learn how to use a bow and arrow and a short sword and shield.
Oh, yeah, I put that.
Right. Little,
yeah,
you know,
the
little
flail.
Yeah. And the thing I hadn't really thought about at that point was that I was standing up, which is kind of unusual for a demo of VR because it's kind of inherently disorienting. And I remember not being too weirded out by that, but I've also had a chance to really kind of get the hang of VR, so to speak. Morpheus this year, they sat me down for the first demo, and it was this cute little kind of playroom type thing. So you got those little robots. They had this great little bit that was like – it was a virtual dollhouse full of those little playroom robots, and they're all over and they're doing stuff. And basically, the only mechanic was leaning in to look at them. And I mean, it looks great. It's you can't really describe VR too well, but it was this fun dollhouse. And there's like a little swimming pool on the side, and the robots are playing in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I like, you know, lean in, look at the guy in the pool, and then a shark comes up and bites him. And I was like, oh no, little man,
you killed him.
Yeah. And I look up, and there's, you know, clouds in the through a skylight above me. And I turn around, and there's like a PlayStation controller on the floor or whatever. And you can like, and the best part is there's a dude, one of the little robots was sitting in a living room, and he's like kicked back in a recliner with like, 14 little tiny beer cans all around him, and he's just watching Shuhei Yoshida on the screen. Like, he's just watching a Sony press event getting hammered, and I'm like, all right, So that was really cool, and I was like, all right, this looks good. You know, the thing I really do like about the Morpheus is that it's comfortable.
Yeah,
everything else is sort of like a scuba mask ski goggle approach, and it's being sucked onto your face, and it's kind of hot and a little bit claustrophobic. And this is something that Sony was very upfront about. Their design is more like a welding mask where it's kind of a hat that covers your face.
Yeah.
Like it's got this – it's head-mounted versus like back of your head mounted.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, it rests there.
Yeah, for me, I've tried almost all of them. It's the most comfortable one for someone with glasses.
Yes.
Oculus, I tried the Crescent Bay demo at CES, and the demo was awesome, but like it was just smashing my glasses against my face.
Yeah.
Like I was afraid if I played it longer that it would just shatter my glasses.
So I played Morpheus at TGS, and I tried the – I always forget the name of it. It's that space dogfighting game.
Eve Valkyrie?
Yes. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yep.
And I actually found it like really disorienting, but I think what I needed to do was sort of ease in with a more comfortable experience. Like
That game, I've played that a few times, and it's
also keep in mind I was jet lagged. I was on the show floor of a convention center in a weird country,
and you're hungover.
Yeah, and there was a woman who was yelling in Japanese next to me, and I was hosting a video, so I had a microphone in my face, and a camera next to me. Mm-hmm. So I was just really confused. I mean, it was also like, you know, the reason I'm excited for Adrift is because it does seem sort of like slow and plotting the way I would mm-hmm. navigate through space. And this is the one I played was more like Star Fox or like mm-hmm. Rogue Squadron yeah. or something yeah, yeah. where it's just fast-paced and energetic. So I think I want to ease into it. But I noticed something at PAX this year that I want to talk about because it actually dawned on me for the first time. Every time I think about these VR headsets, I always picture where I will be using them. And that's probably in my home, right? Mm. But I saw somebody at PAX using one just in a hallway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just standing in a hallway using one. And for the first time, it dawned on me, people are going to bring these things to coffee shops. They're going to bring them to sporting events when they get bored. They're going to go to bars and restaurants. Yeah. They're going to sit in places in public, and they're going to use this stuff.
And they're going to be robbed.
And they're going to be robbed! 100%! That's a cool... That's the best way yeah. to steal
or
somebody.
Laughed at, or both.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, if you're laughed at, but you're in a helmet and you can't hear it, are you laughed at?
Yeah. But, I mean, tree falls in the woods. A good place to actually use it, though, is on a flight.
Like, yeah, yeah.
We right. That's the
we
big one.
We had just a big, hot Garbage United flight there and back.
God,
like
worse.
The idea of being able to strap into this and be like, all right, I'm not in this, you know, flying tube with all yeah. these horrible human
I mean,
beings.
If you're in a shoebox of a studio apartment in San Francisco, you know, and you work for Google or whatever, and you can afford a shoebox, but you can't afford a living room.
I love like, the idea.
You put a living room.
I love that you put it on. You're like, wow, a one bedroom.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
See, that's where it starts to scare me a little. And this is outside of the conversation of games. But, I mean, I do think that the way Facebook's going to start using it is sort of like, hey, 90-year-old woman who's about to die, like, you can hug your dead husband again. Like, there's something really dark about that. Like
dead husband simulator coming soon to the Project Morpheus.
Like, there's, I don't know, that's like some, it's very Philip K. Dick, man. Yeah. Like, I don't.
No, no, no. We are in a dystopia. And
you
it's,
can't say that word on the
I love
Philip
that
K.
you're,
Dick, man.
Do I have to mark it down?
I love it. Now, if you do bleep Philip K. Dick, I think it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
I might do it just for just
bleep every
just incident. For Philip K. Dicks and giggles. who says that? But yeah, it's. I love that we're walking around, Brian. We're walking on GDC, and you were like, this is exactly like we're seeing this. We're seeing games become extremely accessible. We're seeing like, you know, everyone's like suddenly playing games on their iPhone, and like games are becoming more inclusive, and like you can play a game about, you know, being a teenage lesbian in a house, you know, or you can be a flower in the wind, or you can be all kinds of stuff that's not a bald space marine with a gun.
Was the flower in Flower a lesbian?
they never commented on that.
Okay.
You could be a weird desert scarf journey person or whatever, you know, but it's like, you know, we're getting all these cool new experiences that really open up gaming as a medium to not just like aggro teenage boys, mm-hmm. which, you know, some aggro teenage boys have a problem with. But then at the same time, we also have weird VR head hats, which you put on, and it's like you're not there anymore. Like you're suddenly this – like you're this transhuman creature that's mm-hmm.
and that's very interesting.
You're a cyborg.
It's,
you know?
It's like we're opening it up to more experiences than ever. And it's actually gaming is so many different things now. GDC especially taught us that. And I feel like where it's headed with this stuff is that it's that ostrich with its head in the sand, you know, almost quite literally is like now instead of having these amazing shared experiences with people, we mm-hmm. are like funneling down in our own minds. And that's sort of scary to me. Like, I understand why people are excited for it. I totally get that. But I want to make sure that I'm never excited to wear one of these things because it represents escapism to me.
It is mainlining escapism.
Yeah. Yes, 100%. And I don't want to get to a point where I'm only going in because everything outside is sad. Like, I want to go in because there's something cool in there that I can't get anywhere else. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to go like I don't want that moment of like you take the helmet off and there's like dystopian, war-torn civilization. People are just ghosts and there's dead bodies everywhere. Well, and I'm just like, I'm still seeing my family in here. Like, that's horrible. That is.
So, you know, like I mean, like, think Inception. Like, there's that opium den of, like, dudes who are jacked into dreams.
Yeah.
Morpheus is the god of dreams, you know? Yeah. Like, this is they're not being, you know, too subtle with this.
Well, mm-hmm. That's a box quote.
Yeah.
The god of dreams.
So moving on to, like, be a little bit more positive about the actual experience, I got to the first one was the little robot demo. Mm-hmm. The second one is what really blew my mind and really made me just incredibly excited about this, like really, really. They started me out, it's called The Heist, and they started me out sitting down. I'm in this chair, and they're like, you're gonna stand up at some point in the demo, and we're gonna move the chair for you, so don't worry about the chair. And I'm like, okay, that's interesting. And I sit down, and I put on the cool hat of the future.
Cool hat.
And it messes up my hair, and then there,
Adam
I'm sitting.
Jeans mess up your hair.
Yeah, and I'm sitting there, and I'm in a warehouse, and there's like I hear trains going by, and it's this dingy old gross warehouse, and I'm under like a bare bulb, and there's this this angry British dude smoking a cigarette in a tank top, and he's just like sitting there. He's like, "Oi, look at me." And I'm like, I look at him, and I'm like looking around other stuff too. And he's like, "Oh, you think you can look at me like that?" And I'm like, "Well, that's all I'm doing. I'm just literally just sitting here." And I've got a pair of like, you know, Move controllers in my hands. And the guy told me, you know, like at some point you're going to use these. It's going to be pretty simple. Like you're going to use the triggers. Yeah. That's it. And I'm sitting there, and the guy's like, "What did you do with Selena?" And I'm like, "I don't know what you're talking about." And he's like, "Oh, you see, you know," he's just, it's sort of this kind of corny, you know, exposition gangster movie stuff.
Yeah.
And then his phone rings, and it's like, brr, 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 and he's like, oh, for bloody hell, you know, and he pulls his phone out, and he's like, "Yeah, I got him right here. You want to talk to him?" And he goes, "Stand up." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." And I physically, in real life, literally stand up. And that's when I was really amazed, because there was no sense of disorientation or dizziness.
Yeah.
Like that's – it sounds like the simplest thing in the world, but the fact that it was just standing up from a chair in real life and standing up for a chair in the game, and they synced up.
Mm-hmm.
And then he hands me this phone, and I put out the Move controller, and suddenly I have a hand, and I pull the trigger, and it takes the phone. And I hear someone on the phone, and I hold the Move controller to my head, and there's someone talking to me through the Move controller. And they're like, "We need you to go get Selena back." And I'm like, "Okay." And then magically, I'm transported to behind this ornate desk, and I'm in this really fancy study, and it's got kind of glass windows, or you know, glass like doors on the side and the walls, and you can kind of see fireworks going off outside, and there's, you know, great surround sound and everything. And I have hands, and I'm opening drawers in the desk and looking around, and I find a gun, and I find some clips of ammo. I've got a flashlight there. I can pick up the flashlight and shine it on stuff and turn it on and off with the triggers. There's a desk lamp, and I reach over to turn it off, and I pull the trigger on the Move controller, and I click the light off, and I hear a guard coming, and he comes in, and I just duck down behind the desk, and I'm like, I'm physically ducked down, I'm physically crouched on the ground, and in this VR simulation, I'm hiding behind a desk that is not there in real life.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I mean, it's one of those things, like I cannot fully, like, I'm doing my best to describe how bizarre this was, but I mean, it's like, just imagine hiding behind your desk, except it's not there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guard leaves, and I pop back up again. And I think he didn't bust me because I had the light off. And I go through the drawers, and I pull out these ammo clips, and I grab the gun. The gun, they told me, would lock onto the hand, so I wouldn't have to worry about dropping it or whatever. So I've got a gun in one hand. I'm using my left hand to go through drawers. And then I find this key, and I open up this little safe, and I open it up, and there's a diamond inside, which, spoiler alert, that's Selena or whatever. I was supposed to. It's a fancy diamond that has a lady's name. And I reach in.
Turned out it was a precious stone.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be a woman.
Yeah. And it's a tiny woman is in this little tiny cage, and I reach in and I pull the diamond away, and an alarm goes off, and then all these guards start coming in, and so I duck down, and then I start shooting at them from behind this desk. But like, you know how, like, you know, Wolfenstein: The New Order or whatever, you know, a million games do this where there's the lean out mechanic, and you're kind of popping over stuff, playing peekaboo to during a shootout. Mm-hmm. Imagine if that worked like it does in real life, you know, mm-hmm. where you're kind of like, I could kind of peek up over the desk with my headset, and I'm holding my hand above my head to like shoot over something. The absolute holy moment was when I reached out, grabbed the flashlight, and just chucked it at a guard. Like I grabbed this thing off the desk, and it was just like, pull the trigger with the Move controller, and it was the most like organic, natural experience I could have had. I take off the headset, it's all over, you know, they bust me or whatever, and I'm shooting guys in the face, and it's all just like there. It was completely intuitive, like it completely just clicked. I take off the headset, and I did not have any sense of disorientation.
Really?
And that's unfinished hardware. That's a prototype, you know? Like, that's a demo.
It didn't feel like someone ripped a needle out of your arm.
I did not feel like I was going to keel over. I just stood up and took the hat off, and I was like, what just happened, you know? And the fact that Sony is willing to be like, here's a expensive prototype piece of hardware. We're going to have you put this on and basically blindfold yourself and then basically hop around, like jump around at a trade show without signing any waivers that say if you break your arm or our cool hat – you're in trouble, or we're in trouble.
Wow.
They were just like, here's our thing. It works. Go nuts, you know? So I don't know. I'm going to get a Morpheus. Like, I'm going to do that, you know? I have the excuse that it's for work, but like, I don't know. It's just, it's so exciting to be at the forefront of all this.
And now imagine all of that – Which that was just enthralling. Just I can sense your enthusiasm.
Yeah.
And it's just it's infectious. But now take all of that, implement that in Adrift, and then just take your money out of your wallet and give it to
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that the little tiny experience
is gonna
be, like
Adrift. It's stuff like Adrift. It's going to be stuff like, you know, Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, The Witness, or if Firewatch comes to PS4. Like, those are going to be interesting things.
What I think is really funny is that we when I was playing video games growing up, there were like hints of this stuff happening, and it bombed so badly that it went into hiding for what seemed like forever.
Yeah.
And now it's back stronger and smarter than ever. Like, I remember there was an arcade game I played. I don't know if you guys remember it, but you wore this you stepped into this like circle and you stood up and you walked around and you had this helmet on and everything was like polygonal. And if you messed up or waited too long, a pterodactyl would come out of the sky and grab you and pick you up and throw you away. I forget the name of the game. It was awful. It was really bad. And it cost like $5 to play. And it was at the corner of arcades. And there was like a carnival man standing there being like, this is the future. And it was just like, no, it's not.
Yeah.
And you look at stuff like the Virtual Boy, which is basically just a Game Boy with even worse colors and worse battery life.
They gave you migraines.
They gave you migraines and you had to hold up to your face.
To be fair, Teleroboxer was Robot Punch-Out, and the last boss was a robot controlled by a cat. So just
which is pretty rad.
That's pretty
great. Yeah, there was actually some cool games for it. But it's strange to me that there was this movement for this stuff in the 90s, and then it just died and went away, and now it's back. And it's like it's really incredible to see. Like, I wonder what it was. I guess it really is somebody makes that decision to go, I'm going to try this again. We go to GDC. One of the fascinating things about GDC and a lot of these trade shows is that they are very full of – there's a lot of gimmicky stuff there, especially when we saw motion control start happening again a few years ago and iPhone games and stuff. And it all just seems like it comes and goes, but really, like, the experience of sitting on the couch watching TV with a controller in your hand will never be changed. But I'm not so sure anymore. So I think things are starting to change, and it's weird to see them sort of fluctuate and come and go because now it's back harder.
Yeah, and I think there's gonna be room for everything.
Yeah,
that's the whole thing. That there's gonna be room for VR. There's gonna be room for traditional, the games that you've loved for the last generation.
Yeah.
There's gonna be room for these amazing small indies made by four people. There's gonna be room for Candy Crush.
Yep.
That's what's exciting.
When the Wii came out and we were all holding remotes, we said, you know, this is gonna be the death of traditional controls. I'm angry about this. When everyone was playing, Touch the Bird or whatever on iOS. We're like, oh, you know, it's going to be just casual one-handed games that you swipe.
Candy Flapper.
Yeah. Like, the console sales are stronger than ever.
Crush,
like,
crush.
You know, nothing's going away. It's diversified, if anything. So, I mean, everyone gets something. And that's cool.
And to speak back to the fears that you guys were expressing before about where this means we're going as a society, kind of looking outside of the implications of just for the game industry, but for our culture, if we really do wind up one day taking something like a Morpheus off our head, seeing a terrible world around us that we just want to escape back into the virtual one in this device, it will have been our society that failed us, not technology.
It's true.
You know, so I look at this technology with just endless, boundless optimism and happiness, and it's up to us to use it the right way and for us to not screw up our world any farther so that it doesn't become the only thing we have.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about Severed.
Video games.
I was immediately
That's actually a really good point, because Severed is totally using like iPhone-style touch controls.
Yeah. Severed's the follow-up
casuals.
It's a Fruit Ninja RPG that looks like Frank Miller's Ronin. Guacamelee.
That's a good way to explain it.
Yeah. Severed's Drinkbox's follow-up to Guacamelee. It's for the Vita right now, and it's because, it is almost primarily touch-based. I guess we all have played this.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the demo that they revealed at PSX, it has this really, you said Ronin art style. The art style looks like Guacamelee. It sort of has, it's not quite Mexican Day of the Dead. It's more like, almost like underworld mythology. Mm-hmm. It feels like it's creating this own, like, depictions of death and who these characters are. You play as this girl whose family's either been killed or kidnapped, and you only have one arm. You got severed. That's what happened to your arm.
X versus Severed.
X
versus, geez. Oh my God.
That was a Game Boy.
Show's over, guys. That's it.
Yeah, that was bad. But you wander around these dungeons in first person, like an Etrian Odyssey game. But when combat starts, it's this really cool first person touch based encounter that almost feels like Punch Out mixed with Fruit Ninja.
Yes, that's a good way to describe it.
Yeah, where every enemy has a different tell and sort of like you have to sort of really quickly absorb their pattern. But at the same time, later on, multiple enemies surround you. And so you sort of, you have to toggle between just the cardinal directions. And at the bottom of the screen, each enemy has a little like ATB meter. Mm-hmm. And so you have to, in your head, manage time knowing the thing I'm looking at right now isn't going to attack for another 10 seconds, but the thing directly behind me is going to hit me in 3 seconds, so I need to swivel around, quickly find its weak point, and stagger it, and then I can worry about the thing that was in front of me before.
Yeah, and this demo totally, I know they're going to throw in some really cool Metroidvania types. I mean, they already do in the demo, because there's dead ends that you can't get through unless you learn a certain move or get a certain upgrade for your sword. There's an upgrade system in there. It's just, I'm usually kind of turned off by swipey-tappy games, and also by really linear kind of linear experiences, you know. This is very like, you know, point A to point B type stuff. Yeah. But this game looks so good.
Yeah. I think you were right when you start juggling multiple enemies, mm-hmm. that's when the game really comes into its own. I found myself like playing the first 7 or 8 encounters being like, this is fascinating, but if this is the entire game, I'm disappointed. I was actually kind of bummed because I was like, it feels great and it looks awesome, but if it's just like parry, swipe, 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 parry, swipe, 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 kill, that's kind of boring to me. But at some points, there's an enemy in front of you and one to the left and one to the right, and they are all different enemy types, mm-hmm. and they all need to be killed differently. So it is like if you were playing Punch Out and Bald Bull was in front of you, but Glass Joe is on the left and Mike Tyson's on the right.
Yeah.
You want to
get it knocked out.
You're dead.
First of all, I want to play that game now.
Yeah.
I want to play a version of Punch Out where you're fighting three people at once. Yes.
Well, that's kind of what Severed feels like. And it's like, you know, you have Tyson, you know, he's going to kill you instantly, but he might not hit you immediately. But, you know, Bald Bull in front of you, he's way more pressing and he's more chaotic. So you have to pay attention to him more. But
yeah, you call Bald Bull pressing and chaotic?
Yes.
It's a very astute.
And sad and alcoholic.
Nope, that was Soda Popinski.
Yeah. Right. Oh, like Bald Bull was an alcoholic.
Are you kidding me?
They were totally drinking buddies.
Top 10 alcoholics.
That game itself was drunk.
Yeah. First of all, I don't know if you guys know anything about professional boxing, but those guys are usually self-medicating in some kind. They're also they're terrified their wives are going to hit them.
God, this got dark.
Because punches come out of nowhere. Yeah. I mean, aside from the guy that made a grill, most of the stories don't end well. But I really enjoy it, and it's sort of the dungeon crawling elements of it are kind of Zelda light, which I really like, and I really hope it does get into that sort of Metroidvania style a little bit, where there are areas you can't get to yet, mm-hmm. And it's really beautiful. It does really feel like kind of when Adult Swim was at their kind of most or Cartoon Network and stuff like that in the 90s, they were trying really experimental stuff, but even darker than that.
Yeah,
so,
totally. Yeah, we have Severed looks really rad. It's coming later this year.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff.
Excuse me just one moment while we take a brief word from our sponsor. Whether you guys are trying to create a blog, website, or an online store, Squarespace is the easiest solution. With an easy-to-use interface, gorgeous templates, and handy 24/7 customer service from actual human beings, Squarespace is the smartest and simplest way to stake your claim to your own little corner of the internet. Are you trying to break into the games industry? Because Squarespace can be used to make a great-looking portfolio, whether you're an aspiring developer or member of the media. Head over to squarespace.com for a free trial today and use the offer code IGN at checkout to get 10% off your order. Squarespace, build it beautiful.
Helldivers, let's move on to that. You guys,
Helldivers.
That was really
something
lame.
You guys planned?
No.
I don't know. That's just the way the game makes us feel.
Yeah, so Vince, what the hell is Helldivers?
Okay, so every time someone asks me this question, I falter because I'm like, there's so many different elements that it's pulling in from so many different places.
It sounds so boring.
Right.
You tell them about it.
Okay, yeah, it does. And people don't understand. I'm like,
ready for an exciting segment.
Me. So okay. So Helldivers is an isometric two-stick shooter that is kind of like you're playing the lost missions of Starship Troopers, but super hardcore and like everything kills you like Dark Souls.
Wow.
Okay.
I would say it's somewhere it's somewhere between Diablo and XCOM.
Yeah, okay, that works too.
Yeah.
It's just all real time. Yeah.
Right,
it's definitely all real time.
God, I love it. It's one of those things I saw this announced and I was like, it's got kind of a cool aesthetic, but I'm just kind of over twin stick shooters. My current roommate, Anthony Gallegos, some of you may be familiar with, used to work here. He's like, you should check out Helldivers, and I was like, it's one of those games you play. One of those games. Mm-hmm. and then I took a leap and I jumped into it. And I start out playing it on Vita. It is really kind of hard. It's kind of rough on Vita.
It's I can agree with you there. Yeah. So it took me some getting used to the Vita version. I think once you get used to using the back touch for some things, mm-hmm. which usually I absolutely hate, mm-hmm. and it's not ideal here in Helldivers, but it's certainly usable. It didn't cause huge problems for me. But yeah, you're right. The way to play it is PS3, PS4 for sure.
Yeah.
So my one reservation about this game, and I really want to dive in, is that I've heard...
Go to hell.
I should all just quit.
I've heard that it's sort of limited in single player.
So
that's been my reservation or apprehension or qualm or quaint or quilt.
It's really I first played it in single player.
Yeah.
And it doesn't suck. It's just missing the point.
Yeah.
And it's... So basically, like, it's got a constant, persistent war that's taking place, mm-hmm. and you are defending Super Earth.
Not making that up. That's actually what it's called.
Super Earth, and there's like a bunch of threats. There's like Prometheans, which are like they're like iPod squids, aliens, and they shoot blue goo everywhere when you blow them up. And then there's
the Illuminate. Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's the bugs, and there's bugs,
literally called bugs. Yeah, that's what they're called.
And then there's cyborgs who are just like they're like Mean Machine from Judge Dredd. They're
Every time Max says something, I have to look to Vince to be like, is that a lie is that the truth? And you're like, nope, that one was real. Nope, that one was fake. Yeah.
And so you got these three different factions, and basically you're trying to go and kill them, and just you get your dudes and you get your spaceships, but. You'll pick like a mission, and you'll be in your little spaceship. You're gonna go to your galactic interface control or whatever, and it'll show like a map of the galaxy, and you pick like whichever corner you want to go fight. And there's a constant community influence bar. So as you're playing this game, so are thousands of other people, and it'll show in real time the number of other Helldivers dying,
mm-hmm.
and the how much the community is actually making progress in this constant war.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
It's one of those things that I feel like. I feel like between this and – this is one of those games is doing what Destiny made us think it was going to do.
Yes. You know?
Yeah. Like this is totally a game and you'll be in orbit and you'll see like your ship and then you'll see like other people's ships and it'll say their name underneath it.
Yeah.
That's,
so you'll know they're in the same system.
Yeah. And you'll like go into it and it's one of those things like it's competitive but in like a kind of like camaraderie sense. Like mm-hmm. everyone's sort of trying to – like I jumped into a mission and it's like – current like most supportive guy is so and so. He's level 19 and he's contributed this much to like the.
Yeah, that's one of the things I love about it is that in every single one of the different faction like areas, the bugs, the Illuminate, and the cyborgs. When you select that, it'll show you on the bottom the top three biggest contributors to that front of the war.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives you this constant incentive to be like, I want to be known as one of the heroes.
Yeah.
Of this war. It's not just like a leaderboard. That's like, oh, who's the best? Who's more elite? Whatever. Yeah. Who's got the biggest EP? It's like. Who's like contributing to the cause the most?
That's really cool.
So outside of the metagame, there's also the fact that there's like a ton of unlockable stuff. There's just like you just keep getting better gear. You know, like I just got an exosuit last night. And the way you get your stuff is it's not just like you drop down and you're like, oh, I'm going to go to a menu and pull this out. You have to use this thing called a stratagem, which is basically like, you know, you tap one of the triggers and then you give this little menu and then you have to do a button combination. So it's like
dialing it out like a radio. It's like putting in a radio code basically.
Yeah, you're basically
having your ship drop it down.
And then you're given like a countdown timer of when that thing is going to arrive and basically it gets shot from your ship into the earth. So you're like, I need an exosuit. I'm getting killed by big bug people, you know. And so you pull out your thing and you try to avoid these guys while you're dialing this thing in or you have your friend cover you or whatever. And then it gives you a countdown when this is going to show up and you'll see like little kind of like a Looney Tunes like shadow of something hovering overhead. And then it'll just be like foom into the ground. And anything that's underneath that is going to get effed up.
Yeah.
Like if you are in the way of your thing that's getting delivered, you're going to die.
Yeah,
like,
wow. Everything in this game, what I love about it, what I think is fun about it.
Everything will kill you
and total chaos can ensue. So you can call that – one of the things you can call down is a minigun turret that will mm-hmm. that will just kill incoming enemies. Now it will not just shoot you – on purpose, but if it senses an enemy and you are standing between it and the enemy, it will shoot you.
Yeah.
You will get caught in the crossfire.
And you can dive to cover, you can go prone.
There's complete mm-hmm. there's complete friendly fire. If my friend, you know, wants to fire a shot over my head and he's not thinking about the fact that I'm in my way, my girlfriend has several times, she has her shotgun fully upgraded. She loves a shotgun. She has several times turned to save me, quote unquote, and just splattered me to bits by accident in the most comical Looney Tunes kind of way. And
that's wifey material.
Oh, hell yeah. And it's funny because because of that, four player becomes this just comedy of errors. Like one of the coolest things that happened to me while I was playing. Well, I don't know if it was cool, but it was crazy. So I was I was trying to do – they have difficulty levels for all their missions, and it goes up to 12. 12 is like the hardest. I was trying to solo a 6, which is the highest difficulty I've been able to solo. But it was my first time trying to solo a 6. So the way this game works is you go – you drop into a mission, and it's like one of several different kind of biomes. Like they have the forest biome and the snow biome and the desert one. And then the layout is kind of randomized between all the different kind of planets you can be on. And then on each of these is like a series of all different objective points. And they're spread all across the map. And it's like a sandbox. You decide what order in which you're going to – you decide where you're going
to
drop in.
Right. And depending how close you drop into an objective, it'll depend on whether or not you're going to get discovered. So you want to be like – you know, if you're going to – drop in the far corner, far from any of your objectives, you have the opportunity to kind of be a little bit stealthy.
Yeah, because there's that's the thing. There's enemy patrols that go around. You can kind of bring up this map and see them. There's a UAV you can call in to give you like a wider scan range. And you really kind of end up playing an almost Metal Gear type game where you're like, oh, there's a patrol coming. You're watching them. Oh, they're moving southwest. Cool. Let me go around the other way so they don't see me. You're trying to be as stealthy as possible because if they see you and you don't kill them before they alert their buddies, then you're going to suddenly be swarming with enemies. Mm-hmm. And in this game, you have limited ammo and you can die like in an instant, so you have to be as careful as you can. But so in this level 6 situation, the first thing I did was, I think this is so cool, online players can join you with a mission in progress. You can make your game public, and then you'll just be walking around fighting, and then all of a sudden it'll be like another Helldiver is dropping in to help you out, and all of a sudden you'll see an icon on the ground and a drop pod comes down, and Tasty Cakes 420, whatever, comes out of the pod and starts helping you.
The MILF Master has arrived. Song Ripper 69.
So something that I did, I was like, wow, this level 6 is going to be tough. One of the call downs that you can do is you can call in an SOS beacon.
Yep.
And if you call in the SOS beacon, it actually bumps your mission up to the top of the matchmaking list.
Oh, wow. That's
so awesome. Yeah, so that's really so smart. That people will have a higher chance of finding your game.
Yeah.
So I threw that down because I know I'm going to need some help. So I went and did a couple
help
of objectives.
Help divers.
Help divers. I went to do a couple of objectives I knew I could do. I was really careful, really stealthy. It took me like 20 minutes. I was like really conserving ammo. I had a build that was made specifically. I took a laser cannon because that doesn't use ammo as long as you manage the heat properly. So I'm like being super tactical. I get down to the point where I have to call in the shuttle for extraction, which is kind of the hardest part because you have to hold everyone off, waves and waves off for like a minute and a half waiting for the shuttle to come in. So
it's so exciting.
Like, it's so, so tense. So I've got like 30 seconds left. I've got like one turret up. My turret's been destroyed, so I can't put another one down for like a while. And I'm just holding guys off on my own. It's like 30 seconds to go until the dropship gets here. And then randomly, finally, someone answers my SOS and they drop in. Right on my head.
Oh.
Splatter. I'm dead. And I'm like, okay, this is fine. There's a stratagem you can call in that reinforce any dead Helldivers. It just brings them all back in a drop pod down.
Yeah.
So I'm like, great, no problem. There's still like 20 seconds left now. This guy is going to get in and he's going to drop the respawn thing. So he gets – so fine. He gets up. Okay, he starts fighting a couple of dudes. He kneels down. There's an animation. They get down on one knee and bring out their thing. You can see he's dialing up the thing to bring me back. He's just about to toss it, and another Helldiver is joining the match.
Oh,
right on his head. Kills him.
Yeah.
There's now about 15 seconds left, and we're both in pieces. Okay. Third guy comes up. I'm like, okay, no problem. This is fine. It's less than optimal, but this guy can just – now he can throw out his respawn beacon and we'll all be in and we'll all get on the dropship and it's going to be great for everyone. Until the guy throws a grenade at his own feet instead of the respawn thing.
Happens the
– that's amazing. And kills himself.
Yep.
With 10 seconds left.
Yeah.
30 minutes of like hard tactical stealth like –
yeah.
Work.
I actually
down
have
the drain, but I was laughing my ass off. Yeah. Yeah.
I had pins and needles in my hands and feet from that story. I was on the edge of my seat for that one.
That is God.
And this kind of stuff. This is not like an isolated thing. Like I could sit here for an hour and tell you stories just like this that happen all the time because it's a sandbox where they
you sound,
give
you
so
sound
many
like a
things.
Like a war grandfather telling.
No, that's how I feel.
Like an 8-year old grandpa.
Did you need the bugs, Cam? And I hit the jetpack, and we jumped in the drop ship, and Max threw a grenade, and we got out of there.
Yeah,
it was great. No, it's just.
I got these medals.
It's just one of those examples of a
just
game
like yogurt lids.
That just has a system and an environment where they give you so many different variables. They give you just enough freedom to hang yourself with, and then they add other people to that equation, and it's just chaos or magic every time you
so
play.
So good. I like. Yeah. It's some of the best like couch co-op I've played in a while. Yep. It's just it's all the right moving pieces connected. And it's the same way that I just, when I first saw XCOM, I was like, that looks kind of cool, but I don't really get it. And then the second I had my hands on it, I was like, oh my God, it's like playing with little toys.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's just, I turned into a giant 8-year-old again. So that's
awesome.
Great.
I'm going to go buy that.
That's awesome. That's cool. When's your review going
to
be up to you?
Hopefully should be this week. We wanted to do a full video review on that. So we needed a little more time with the game. And also I was going off to PAX.
Sure. Yeah. So, GDC is insane.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So, should be... You know, no promises. I don't want to like lock people into a date, but should be this week. The game is out already. In case you haven't noticed, I feel pretty positive about the game, so you wouldn't be doing yourself a disservice to go out and buy it.
4 out of 10.
Cool.
Yep. 4 out of 10.
Not a 4 out of 10. I had so many other things written here, but then we just got excited and kept talking about things.
Yeah,
it happens.
Yeah. It's been honestly like a really fun episode. Yeah, like, there's so much stuff to talk about.
So we dived, but do you want to drop now?
Drop the
PlayStation drop. Thanks, Ryan Clements, for writing things for us.
All right.
These are the games that came out this week.
There are new PlayStation games this week. Alter Echo, the PS2 classic, is coming to digital.
Yeah,
there you go.
Did anyone play that game?
I think it's a bit of a stretch to call it a classic.
It's a Japanese RPG. Atelier Shally, Alchemists of the Dusk Sea. I think that's a JRPG. I don't even know.
Atelier would be the correct French way to pronounce it, but I think most of them say Atelier.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I'm bored, I try to remember the full title of Artanelico Koga, the Nell of RCL. God, that's just...
Artanelico?
Two of those are words. That's like a 27-syllable fragment thing that somebody in marketing approved. Anyway, Atelier Shally, Alchemist of the Dusty is coming to PS3 Digital Retail. Battle Hunter, the PS1 classic, is coming to digital.
Again, very liberal use of the word classic.
Yeah. That just means old at this point, right?
Delve deep into the ruins of former high-tech cities in search of prized relics to stave off extinction. Every video game. DMC Devil May Cry Definitive Edition.
Yes, I'm super excited for this one.
Yeah,
actually.
Me too.
If you didn't play DMC on 360 or on PS3, this just came out this week. Jose loved it. That game is awesome.
Yeah, he gave it an 8.8, I believe.
Definitive.
It is definitive. Yep. It's been defined.
Flame
for
Over.
Now. Flame Over.
Flame Over.
Firefighter game.
All right.
Yeah.
It's a, oh boy. Blending top-down, squirt-em-up action.
Squirt-em-up.
No.
We're going to move on. Hotline Miami 2, wrong number, is coming to PS4, PS3, and PS Vita.
That game also has top-down squirt-em-up action, if you think about it.
Yeah, it's blood squirt-em-up.
Yeah, it's blood.
Yeah.
And I think everyone's going to play this game.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Chloe Rad reviewed it for us.
8.8.
Great review, by the way. Awesome. Yeah. I loved that review, especially the video review.
Yeah.
That is out today.
Yeah.
Or,
jam on it, yeah.
Yeah.
I want to go play that right now.
Scram Kitty DX is coming to PS4 and PS Vita.
Oh, the classic.
I played that game on Wii U. I really, really, really wanted to like it. The title is incredibly dumb, obviously. Mm-hmm. It's sort of a shoot 'em up, but you're on rails.
It's a scram 'em up.
Yeah.
Scram 'em up.
Okay.
So it's interesting. And you play it, it's a cat, and you shoot. I think you shoot mice. I don't know.
All right.
Life is a long road, fellas.
We're all just dust in the wind. Sniper Elite 3 Ultimate Edition is coming to PS4 and PS3.
Just in time for you to celebrate American Sniper being the highest grossing movie of 2014.
God damn it.
Shoot Hitler in his testicle. Sparkle 2. It's coming to PS3.
Yeah, I'm one of the people that really just didn't get enough Sparkle out of Sparkle 1.
Yeah, I'm
so
surprised it's getting a sequel. I mean,
so this is
one of those things that you swear it's not going to be successful enough for you to get another one, but...
Are you sure you're not reading the list of adult entertainment films coming out this week?
This really does, yeah. What's weird, though, is it says it's coming to PS3, but it's a digital three-way cross-buy, so...
Okay. Yeah, now you're definitely reading that list.
Now that definitely sounds like it's up for an AVN award.
Yep.
Squirm like up. That. Oh, yeah.
Best digital three-way
cross-buy. Tokyo Twilight Ghost Hunters is coming to PS3 and PS Vita. That sounds like a Japanese game.
What part of it came it away?
I think the ghost was
it. Was it the
hint.
All of it part?
Yeah. Yeah, so there you go. Also, we're in the middle of the spring break, spring edition, spring forward, whatever the hell they're calling
spring
it.
Spring sale.
Yeah. Spring sale. Yeah.
Yeah, we're in that span where pretty much every week something cool comes out.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Really cool. Now. We had Helldivers last week. We have Axiom Verge at the end of the month.
If you have PlayStation Plus, for the love of God, go get Ollie Ollie 2.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, it's so good, especially on Vita. Yeah. So good.
You know what's weird? I didn't play much Ollie Ollie 1, and I played Ollie Ollie 2 on my PS4 the other night while I was waiting for the Vita version to download.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you don't know what you're doing at the beginning of that game, it's very, very difficult. And you basically get electrocuted constantly because the DualShock is constantly shaking every time you screw up. But after a little while, I figured out what I was doing, and I took my show on the road, took my Vita to PAX, and I played about 3.5 hours of that game on the plane yesterday. And it is
so, did I.
So good. Oh. Yeah.
I didn't know you were playing also. That's awesome.
Yeah, it really it takes a little while to get used to if you're used to something like Tony Hawk or even just regular platforming games. Mm-hmm. But once you get the rhythm down of the flicking up and then hitting the button right before you land, it's really rewarding to actually pull off amazing combos, especially when you're long stretches of grinds and jumps and stuff like that. And landing a perfect at the end of it and getting like 100,000 points is really cool. Yep. It's a 2D side-scrolling
skateboarding game.
Platforming game, whatever you want to call
it. Those same devs are working on a game called Not a Hero.
Yeah.
I played a little bit of at PAX. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Same guys. Ooh,
yeah,
nice.
But it's a, like, it's almost like a 2D Hotline Miami.
That sounds interesting.
And you're side scrolling 2D.
You're a bunny president, is that
right? You can be one of many characters.
Okay.
But they're all insane. It's about getting through these like enemy filled stages super quick. You're going to die all the time, but instantly respawn.
One more quick shout out to PlayStation Plus Counter Spy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, how was that?
Yeah.
Really interesting.
Yeah, I had a really busted demo of that at E3 or something, and I was like, skeptical.
It's very strange. The levels are randomized. It is a side-scrolling game that eventually goes sort of isometric when you hide behind something to kill someone's stealth. So it's 2D and then pops into like a sort of Gears of War thing.
Yeah.
But it's a stealth game with a lot of action elements. You're this weird sort of like Team Fortress-looking, lanky spy guy, and you have to sneak into places and get plans and get out. And it's really interesting.
Yeah,
really
I really like the presentation. It sort of feels like Archer meets early,
early
Bond.
Totally.
You're sort of fighting both sides of a Cold War, so you're like, you know, you're it's like the, what was the Clint Eastwood movie? For a few dollars more.
American Sniper?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's free. Like always with these things, just like sync the download or whatever, and then you'll have them forever. Even if you don't want it immediately, it's probably something you want to play some afternoon.
Yeah, I found myself on the couch this weekend just looking around at my friends and just shouting, like, they're games again! We can be excited about the game!
It's nice, right?
It's so good.
It's really nice. I've had sort of I always love video games, but there's been a nice little renaissance recently.
I want to reiterate, because you did mention it briefly, but it cannot be stressed enough. You absolutely owe it to yourself to get and play Axiom Verge at the end of this month.
Yeah.
Do not miss Axiom Verge. Yep. It is a Neo Metroid. It's a Neo Super Metroid with an art style.
Oh, yes. We've talked about this.
Good.
Yeah.
We will definitely be doing things to that game with our mouths.
Awesome. I just did not.
Wow. Yeah. Jeez. Are you sure that one wasn't on the drop? I think you were one segment late on that one. Let's close the show off, Brian.
Yes, hi.
It is your turn for the Essential 50. For those of you who don't know.
So I prepared an interesting one this week, and if you've known me for a while or heard me on podcasts
Motor
for a
Storm
while,
Pacific Rift.
Exactly. Okay, the rubber duck game I've talked about this a few times over the years, but there's a game that came out. It was originally part of the Capcom 5 on the GameCube, which means that you probably won't associate this with
the Fabulous 5.
The Fabulous 5, which actually only became, I think, one game because Dead Phoenix got canceled. Mm-hmm. Beautiful Joe ended up going multi-platform. Resident Evil 4 ended up going multi-platform.
Yep. I think Piano 3 was the
Piano
only one.
Piano 3 was the only one GameCube exclusive, but the fourth one was this really interesting game called Killer 7. And I've talked about it a few times over the years. Are you a fan?
Very big fan.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, so Killer 7 it came out for GameCube and it also came out for PS2. Those are really the only ways to play this game now. It was created by Suda51, who's made a bunch of really strange games throughout the years. To me, this is my favorite of his.
Yeah.
It is about this guy named Harmon Smith, who is a old man in a wheelchair who, in his mind, creates 7 personalities that are all assassins, and they all kill in different ways. So he's got multiple personality disorder, and the game sort of celebrates that. The plot is ridiculous. I think there are people still trying to figure it out.
Yeah, there are FAQs on GameFAQs that are just
that are books,
15,000 words about what the hell this
FAQs
game is about.
On GameFAQs, you say?
Yeah.
That's
where you find them.
Max.
what I like about this game, and it's interesting talking about Severed, is that it kind of reminds me of Severed in a way.
Totally.
And I've never actually made that connection until this weekend. But it is, it's got this sort of, think of like a really messed up Wind Waker. Like it's got a very polygonal, very flat, stylized, sort of almost cel-shaded look. Mm-hmm. And it is a first-person game, but it is kind of on rails in the same way where if you drew a line down the center of a page and then started drawing diagonal lines coming off of those diagonal lines, that's the way the game is laid out. And it kind of, it came after an era during the N64 where platforming games had run amok. People had sort of almost over-liberally used 3D environments to just be like, we made a big area, run around it, collect balloons and puzzle pieces and all this stuff like that. And it was also before the era of the first-person shooter being this sort of like massive world where you could run around, run in circles, and kill people in maps. It was very linear, and people were really mad at it at the time for that. Very mad. Because it was hyper-stylized, it was weird, eccentric, incredibly Japanese. And kind of on rails, but you could turn around and go back and forth. The gameplay involves you basically switching between these seven personalities who all have different attacks and magic and special moves to fight zombies and bad guys. And it's loosely inspired by a movie called El Topo, which Max and I watched recently, drunk one afternoon. Amazing, wonderful way to spend an afternoon, by the way.
Yeah, we wound up in Toys R Us buying Playmobil, so, you know, that kind of movie.
To be fair, we would have done that no matter what.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's basically about going around this world and killing these enemies. And there's every single one is this, like, think kind of Shadow of Colossus, where it's a big buildup to beat this one big guy. And each one of these guys has their own very distinct personality. They're all deranged. Some of them are very sexual. Some of them are just sick in the head. And you have to kill them.
Yeah.
This is not a, like, it doesn't scream PlayStation, but because it's only been available on two platforms, and the PlayStation 2 is one of them, I urge you to hunt it down in some capacity. Play it however you can, if you can find it. It's about 10 or 12 hours maybe to get to start to finish. Super artsy, super weird, really dark, really beautiful game, and a wonderful experiment that I'm glad was made.
Just extraordinarily nihilistic
and
completely unhinged in a way that very few games or things, entertainment pieces of any kind I've ever experienced.
Yeah, and Suda's sort of gone off the rails, pun intended, a little bit lately. Stuff like Lollipop Chainsaw and Killer is Dead. Like, I wasn't a huge fan of those.
No.
But this game is so unlike anything else. Anything before it and anything after it. It's so weirdly unique. The game oscillates between being really cool, really heady, and actually, like, legitimately scary.
Yeah.
Like, the enemies are all invisible, and you have to sort of, like, shine a filter. And so all of a sudden, like, you'll hear laughter, you'll shine the filter, and this suicide bomber zombie will be directly in front of you.
Yeah, the enemies are, I think they're called Heaven Smiles.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is just weird.
Yeah, it's weird. The story's weird. It has a really cool New Game Plus.
Yep.
Rebrands the game Killer 8.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So that's what I present to you guys. Take it or leave it.
I approve 100%.
Sweet.
Absolutely. Awesome. Have you played this set? This would be right up your alley.
Yeah, it would, actually.
I think I have, Brian, I think I have your GameCube copy.
You do.
I should dust that off.
Boot it up, man.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm outvoted, so. So that works here. I don't know. No, I definitely remember seeing that around a lot, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So have we talked about these are going to all funnel into one giant list someday, right?
Yeah. So far we have Bushido Blade, we have Katamari Damacy, and we have Metal Gear Solid 2, 1. Metal Gear Solid 1.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're gonna be funneling these into a single list, but then we're gonna get to the point where I'm just the day Max comes in and mentions MotorStorm is the day the game.
Yeah,
gets
that's
vetoed.
The day that blood is spilled on this table. So it's MotorStorm Pacific Rift, to be specific.
That's right. We should talk
be
about
Pacific.
This. We can veto games here. I was actually expecting this one too. I'm luckily in a good room.
Yeah.
But I think a separate group of editors would have shot me out of the sky because, like I said, it's very polarizing. I believe we gave it like a 6.5 or a 7 on IGN.
Yeah.
You know, not the best, but
we also gave Skyward Sword a 10.
Yeah, well, sometimes
you win some,
we're
you lose some.
What can we do?
Opinions.
So yeah, there it is.
Yeah, video games.
Beyond.
Cool.
Video
games. Did it. Well, do we have any mail? Did you get?
No, a lot of the mail was actually just linking into the things we already talked about.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go.
Where's our Helldivers review? We talked about it.
Yeah.
I want to reiterate Morpheus thank you Pax. To everybody who came up to us during PAX and GDC.
Oh, seriously.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That they love the show. It's been really fun for us to try this out and take it on, and I'm really excited with where it is and where it's going. So,
yeah
thanks for sticking with us.
It's this always evolving thing. You know, we're in the Facebook group every day talking to you guys.
Yep.
You know, you, like, post in there, like, what do you want to see out of this show? Like, what new things? Like, we brought in the Essential 50, but what sort of new things? Like, is the drop useful to you guys? Like, do we not need to talk about what games are coming out this week? Because that sort of just turns into us reading a list.
I do
and
like to make
jokes.
Fun of JRPG titles.
I mean, that's good. Yeah, maybe we can just pull out one or
no
two.
No shortage of them.
Yeah. Yeah, but go to Facebook. Send us an email at beyond@ign.com.
Yeah, the Facebook group is great. Yeah. I like to hop in there. I asked those guys what they thought about Morpheus and told them to bug you about Battletoads.
Thanks.
And they did.
Yeah, so it was good. Very much for ruining my
You can
packs.
Also get us directly on Twitter. I try to be funny too much on Twitter. I'm Max Scoville. Marty, you're Marty Sleva. McBiggity. Mm-hmm. I just was remembering I pronounced your name right. You're McBiggity on Twitter.
Yeah.
Brian is Agent Bizzle.
I also try to be funny there, although I'm way more successful at it.
Yeah, you don't try too hard. I try too hard, you know.
I talk about politics and my views on Coney.
I thought that was Colin.
That was Colin. I'm in Colin's chair.
Vince, what's your
Vincognito. That's V-I-N-C-O-G-N-E-A-T-O. A little bit different from my name.
That's a good Twitter name.
Yeah, thank you.
I like that one.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And it's like you're hiding, but you're also cool.
What should they go check out? You got reviews and stuff going up, yeah?
Yeah. So the next thing going up will be my Helldivers review. Mm-hmm. So look for that. Hopefully coming this week, but yeah, I've written a bunch of reviews. The last one I did was Dead or Alive 5 last round. So I do a lot of reviews is kind of my focus here at IGN. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when you want that critical itch to be scratched, I am your man.
Yeah, but as you can tell, even though the review's not up yet, we seem to enjoy Helldivers quite a bit.
Yes, cool. Indeed.
Yeah. I do particularly love reading your reviews. You're very good at that.
Thank you.
That's sir. There's certain people that like I see them write a review and I go read it despite if I have any interest in the game or not. So that's cool.
Wow, thanks, man.
Sure, love you.
All right,
love you.
And on that note, thank you guys all for joining me. And thank you guys for listening at home or watching, whichever. Beyond.
Beyond.
Beyond. Beyond.
You keep saying beyond at the same time. We're tying. It's like beyond. Forget it.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over 1 million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics, and sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues, and it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.